Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Just Believe Radio. I'm Lisa Tarvis, your host. I'm a holistic health practitioner, a metaphysician, an intuitive counselor. I do all kinds of stuff. And I am also obviously a radio host. You can find my show called Just Believe on the RightStream Network every week on Sundays at 1 o'clock p.m. Eastern. And you can find out more about me on my website, which is lisatarvis.com, www.lisatarves.com. And every week we try to have some really interesting guests on, focusing on different areas of spirituality. You know, sometimes it's holistic health, subjects, sometimes it's metaphysical subjects, paranormal subjects. We really try to get to the basics of spirituality and taking care of yourself in a holistic way. So if you happen to be an expert in one of those areas or you know of one and you'd like to be a guest on the show, send me an email at lisa@lisatarvis.com and I will get back to you. By the way, the call-in number, anybody who wants to call in with any questions for either one of our two guests today, the call-in number is 347-945-7246. Again, that's 347-945-7246. Also, the chat room is open, so if you have any questions or anything you want to say, please feel free to check in on the chat room. And I check in on that periodically throughout the show. So let's see, what else do I have? I've been working on this. This kindness challenge that I've had come up. I saw it. I get something called dailygood.org. It's an email that I get, but that's their website, dailygood.org. And they've been doing this kindness challenge, which I absolutely love. So I've been posting it on Facebook daily on my personal page, but I don't think I've been putting it on my metaphysical healing page or any of that. But I have been putting it on my personal page. And so today we're on day 12 of the kindness challenge. But I encourage everybody to check out dailygood.org and check out that kindness challenge. It's kind of it's a 21-day thing. They say 21 days makes a habit. And what they're basically doing is getting you, trying to get you in the habit of doing kind things for other people. And, it's really just interesting. It's really, it's been really kind of sweet. I've really enjoyed it. Like I said, first of all, I gave you the wrong website. It's actually not that. It's called kindspring.org. Kindspring, KINDSPRING.org. The other one's a good website too, though, by the way. And they have, I think that's how I got this link, if I remember right. But regardless, the 21 day kindness challenge is actually there. Day 12, just for instance, is donate clothing or household goods. The idea is to, stuff, despite our best intentions, often tends to accumulate. We sometimes end up with a closet or cupboard full of wonderful things that we hardly ever use, things that could make a world of difference to someone else, et cetera. So that's the kind of things that they're talking about. I think day one was, give somebody a really nice tip. Give somebody $5 more than you would usually give them, or a little bit more, whatever you can afford to give them when you go and do whatever you're doing in your day-to-day life. It's been really fun. It's been really interesting, and I like the idea of it being, I like the idea of it being 21 days, because I've always heard that 21 days makes a habit. Anything you do 21 days in a row becomes a habit. So I like that, and that's what got me interested in it. As soon as I saw a 21-day kindness challenge, and I thought, wow, if we could all just do 21 days, if we could just do one kind act a day, what a difference it would make in the world. So anyway, now I'm done preaching about that. I'm going to move on to our first guest. I'm excited about this. I love paranormal, I love the paranormal, and I love paranormal topics, and I love paranormal authors and investigators and all of that. So today I have on Jason Dowd. Jason is an internationally exhibiting and award-winning artist who's best known for his haunting series of The Strange and Unusual, Dreams, Nightmares, Fears, and Fantasy. He is a paranormal investigator who was called upon by A&E to assist with photographic evidence on a new series called Paranormal America, but the series has been postponed. Dowd's own investigation group is exploring the paranormal, and he works with Florida ghost hunters as the video photographic expert. Dowd has seen and talked to ghosts since he was 6 years old. He wrote the book A Haunted Soul about these experiences and his road to accepting his psychic gift. So I would love to bring Jason on and let him talk to us a little bit about his experiences with ghosts. Jason, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
How you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing well.
Good. I'm really fascinated by this because a lot of times ghost hunters aren't also what they would call psychics. They bring in psychics. They most of the time believe in them, but they don't a lot of times they don't do both. So I think that's what really got me interested in your work specifically, because you've actually had experiences before you ever did any ghost hunting, and which would make you obviously gifted in more than one area. So tell all our listeners about your first ghost experience.
Well, my first ghost experience was actually on October 31st,
which is Halloween,
in 1986. And the ghost experience was actually at the Green Lady Cemetery up in Burlington, Connecticut. And I was actually there just kind of enjoying myself, because we usually like to go down to all kinds of these cemeteries and investigate, and not even so much investigate. Me and my family would go up there and just kind of look through the history of these places. And this one happens to be really old. The first person that was buried there was Elizabeth Partemeyer, I believe her name was. If I'm saying that correctly, and she died in 1799, and there was a big, huge thing about her death, and not everybody knows for sure what happened, but they do know that she died. But a lot of people were saying that she drowned, and she was an expert swimmer, so there's no reason for her to drown, especially in shallow water. So there's a lot of speculation that her husband had killed her, and nobody ever came to justice for it. So I was always told for the longest time that this place is haunted by my grandparents and my parents, but they didn't really believe in that kind of stuff too much. So, I just kind of took it with a grain of salt. And I had been there many, many times doing grave rubbings and just exploring the places, because there were some people in there from the Continental Congress, there were some people in there from the Revolutionary War, all kinds of things. And come to find out, this particular October, we went up there, and Halloween day, we were going to go up there before I went trick-or-treating with my parents. And normally I was just supposed to go straight home, because there was a lot to do, obviously. And my dad decided to take me there, because it was just around the corner from my school in Bristol. So we did that, and as we went, it was kind of a normal day. It was cold. It was dark, and I mean, New England gets darker a lot faster than the rest of the country does. And we were just having some fun, and it was time to go. And as it was time to go, we started to walk. We walked past the stone wall that surrounded the place, and then when everything got like eerily quiet, it's almost kind of the point where, right before a tornado or something happens, it gets super quiet, and just you can almost hear the pin drop from like a mile away. And when that did, when that kind of happened, it kind of, I kind of got put into this, like, almost a, it almost felt like a parallel universe. I couldn't explain it back then because I was just about, 8 years old. And when I turned around, I saw nothing, but it seemed like I just saw nothing but the cemetery. And, you know, from where we were parked on the road, I was probably about 3 feet from the wall, and then about another 3 feet from that wall was her grave. And we were looking around, and it just, like, all of a sudden here comes this green mist out of the ground, and it just kind of just started flowing around and flowing around and flowing around. And then it eventually turned into this beautiful woman and dressed in around late 1700s, early 1800s period clothing. And she was just walking and floating there. And as she walked, she just kind of looked down towards her feet. I mean, it wasn't anything scary at all. And she just kind of kept walking and looking, but she never touched the ground. And when she got around to the other side of her, of the other side of the stone, she started to come, like, facing directly towards me. And as she came walking towards me, she looked up. And then's when I caught her eye. And that was just, like, the most intense thing I've ever seen in my life, because I never actually looked at a spirit face to face. And as she started walking, she came walking up towards the wall. She pointed her finger at me. She got to the wall. I was maybe 3 feet from her. She smiled and then disappeared. And then everything went back to normal. Like, time was back where I was. It was almost like a UFO encounter. And
oh my God.
I was like, oh my goodness, Dad, did you see that? And he goes, I saw nothing of the sort. But he was just as stunned as I was. Now, I can't prove that he didn't see anything, and I can't prove he did. You know, there's a lot of people that just don't believe in ghosts, and sometimes they can't see ghosts, but they can feel the energy around them. So he may not have seen anything, but for the longest time, I didn't know what I was seeing. And, you know, I went to a Lutheran school. That kind of stuff is just taboo. And, you know, they didn't believe, they believe in ghosts, but they don't believe in human ghosts. They believe in demons. So I was going around telling everybody, hey, look, you know, this is what happened to me. And people are like, wow, that's really interesting. But the problem with it was is that the teachers didn't like it because it was a Lutheran school, so I was reprimanded for that. So then I went and sought after the pastor, and he said, you didn't see anything like human because it's not human, and that's not a, it wasn't a demon. So he goes, just drop it. You know, it's just, it's all in your head. So here I am, 8 years old, you know, trying to figure out what the heck's going on. Everything that I've learned in my religious school is being challenged, but yet my mind is being challenged. So it was a big, huge conflict for me. And back then, we didn't have ghost on books, and we didn't have the internet. I mean, the biggest computer I think we had back then was a Tandy, and you had to sit there and use one of those little floppy drives to make everything work. So we didn't have the we just didn't have the resources that we have now. So it took me a long time to figure it out. But when I did find it out, it was in 1993. I went up to see my grandparents, and on my aunt's desk was this book about haunted Connecticut. And sure enough, inside the store, inside this book was the Green Lady Cemetery, and they had hundreds of people that have accounted to the same exact thing I saw. So then I kind of realized it was real for the first time, and I wasn't just seeing things, and it wasn't all in my head.
Wow, that's really got to be, like, you know, to have that validated, you know, because you the first time you see things like that. I mean, I for me it was angels from the very earliest moments of my life. So, you know, but to have it validated that other people have also seen it, it's very it feels good. It just makes you kind of feel, okay, I'm not nuts. That's good. So how did that experience? What did you do with your religious beliefs? How did that affect what you'd been taught at that to that point and from that point forward?
That was really hard because I really didn't know what to make of it. You know, you put it in the back of your head, you're still young, you know. So I'm thinking for the longest time I really thought maybe it was just all in my head. And it actually made me horrified of spirits because and death and everything else, because I'm like, well, you know, if death isn't, if we really go to heaven, then I shouldn't be seeing what I'm seeing. So maybe, you know, if I die, I'm really not going to go anywhere, and I'm really going to be just stuck in limbo. And that freaked me out. And then shortly after that year, it was in 1986. That same year, my great grandmother had passed away, and that was the first time I saw a dead body. And when I saw the first dead body, that really made me freak out because they look almost to the point of being wax. And so you mix these two very profound instances in somebody's life when you're just starting to learn things in its own right, and it really put me on edge, and I didn't want to talk about it anymore in front of my school, because it's like I'm just going to be reprimanded and being told it's all in my head.
Right.
So it took a long time for me to really figure this out, and actually, I kind of. I'm still trying to deal with it. You know, I know what the Bible says, and I believe what the Bible says 100%. So if that's the case, you know, maybe you know, but I hate to say this too, but you know, the Bible does say that if you were actually able to use 100% of your brain, we do use 100% of our brain, but we don't use the thinking 100% of our brain. And if we were actually able to do that, it says that we have the capability of moving mountains, and I can see that because there are people that have the ability to sit there and see things and move things with their mind. I've seen it on video. I've heard about it in books. So what if that's the capability of actually tapping into the other world? What if that is, you know, these spirits? Now, here's another thing. What if these spirits aren't actually human beings? What if there are actually demons out there to try to freak people out like me to doubt my religion? You know, if you study demons, they can turn into anything. They can be anywhere. There is no limits or boundaries to what they can do. So what if it is, you know, so then I'm sitting there thinking, what if this is, you know, the devil's way of trying to trick me into doubting God? And it almost did a very good job of that. And then there's the, you know, so there's so many different things about it. It's like, which one is right? I don't know which one's right. But, you know, there is a possibility that we could actually be walking right now in between that second parallel universe, and there might be a way of actually channeling that energy. Now, does that mean we're talking walking through hell with the people that are not in heaven? Is this purgatory? You know, what is this? I don't know yet. But I do know that I do believe in the afterlife. I do believe that there is a heaven and a hell. Explaining it from that point on, I have no idea, and I'm hoping that someday I'll learn and actually, get the answers.
I think that a lot of times our religious beliefs definitely interferes with what we know on a soul level. What we've been taught, what's been kind of burned into us from our earliest days, and what when we take away all that knowledge, all the stuff that's in our brains, you know, all the stuff that we've been taught, and we get down to the stuff that just feels right when you take all that away, you know, when you take all those lessons and all that teaching away, and you get to what you just if you've never read the Bible, what would you believe? What would you believe? I mean, long before I read the Bible, I had very, very core beliefs. And from being a little kid and my grandparents reading the Bible to me, I'd be like, that's not right. That's not the way it is there. You know, it's not. And, you know, of course, that was horrible because I was like a six-year-old demon myself, you know, because how do you question the Bible, you know? But for me, it was just like the Bible, the things that my grandparents, at least the way they interpreted it to me, sounded like, God was mean, you know, or vengeful. And that did not, from the time I was hearing these stories, you know, that didn't resonate with me. So, I think that I was automatically, instead of using my brain a lot of the times, I was thinking with my soul. Like I was remembering almost with my soul about being in that other existence and knowing God and, you know, and all of that. So I think it can really confuse the situation and confuse us when, you know, and religion is good. Don't get me wrong. I mean, I believe in all religion. I think that they're all beautiful and all have something to teach us. But I am a Christian and I believe in Jesus and all of those things. But at the same time, I go 100% based on, I run my life, I do what I do based on what feels right in my gut, what my intuition tells me is right and wrong. And, you know, it's never led me wrong. It's never led me astray. It's never made me, you know, it's when I thought too much or I felt too much, like you know, with out of love or out of fear or whatever, that's when I made the mistakes. You know, when I was doing it out of, when I was doing it out of like that, just knowing, I was always right on. So I think that I understand what you're saying, because I've had the same experience, not with ghosts, but with angels. So, and I've had experiences with ghosts as well, but, you know, but that's since then. But as a little kid, you're really very conflicted. You know, I have my grandparents telling me, you can't question what's in the Bible. The Bible is the word of God. And I'm like, well, that just doesn't feel right, you know? And it's a very fine line that you walk. But you were talking a little bit about, you were saying some stuff about demons. How did you, I mean, did you ever encounter something that you knew? Because, I mean, obviously this lady, even though you're saying that she could have appeared, she could have been a demon appearing as a kind spirit or whatever, but what, you know, whether or not that's true, obviously we don't know, but did you ever have an experience where it was no doubt this was a demon?
Oh, yeah. Actually, when I first moved down here into Florida, it was just a few years after I moved down here. And what was really interesting about this thing is that I've learned about demons all my life. I mean, that's all they really taught in school, in my Lutheran school, is because these were the things that they actually believed were out there, because these are the fallen angels. These are Satan's helpers. And
wow.
When I had moved into this house, it was off of Canterbury Drive in Land O'Lakes, Florida. And it started right around my seventh grade year. And the reason being, in seventh grade year, there was a lot of transition for me. And I believe that that was really what kind of weakened me enough to allow this thing to do what it wanted to try to do. And basically what ended up happening was I had a really bad case of chicken pox when I was in seventh grade. I was really, really sick. They almost wanted to put me inside of the hospital because of how bad it was. There wasn't a flat spot on my body, literally. I looked like a toad, even worse than a toad. I had chicken pox on top of chicken pox. So, you know, when I was doing that, I was also going through my confirmation class, and there was a lot of things going on. My parents were not getting along. You know, just everything started going right down the tubes. And coming up into that, the next year, and this is really when it really started, was in my eighth grade year, it was that I was getting ready to transition to high school. I just barely made seventh grade because my friends and stuff brought me all my homework to do, so I was able to work from home because I was out for almost 2.5 months.
Wow.
I was getting confirmed. My parents were actually divorcing at that point in time, and there was a lot of change. You know, like I said, I was about ready to go to high school. So now here's the most influential time of anybody, when they are so distracted by so many things that have gone on. And my body was still weak from the chicken pox, and everything was just crazy. So it's like, here's the best chance to happen. And what actually happened was, I didn't realize it was a demon at first, but basically every night this shadow would come out of the closet and just stare at me. But when it did, it was like the whole place just grew cold as ice. I mean, it's just hate. I can't even express it more than that. It's just sheer hate and evil, and you just knew it. It's like the hair stood up on your back, on the back of your neck, and you just didn't feel comfortable. And it took me a long time to just get to sleep, but I just eventually just put it out of my head. And as things started progressing, a lot more, it got a little bit more guts and started doing some things to me. Like, I'd wake up with letters carved into my chest. I would be waking up with scratches down my back. I was waking up with all kinds of horrible things to me. And then I have to try to deal with going to school, and I have to dress out for PE, because PE is 50% of your grade to dress out. So how do you sit there and have all these scars and all these bruises and all these things on your body and dress out? You know, because all the teacher has to see is that I have this. And guess what? They're going to call the Child Protective Services on my parents when they didn't do anything to me. So it was really hard for me to do that, but I was also facing the ability of failing eighth grade over physical education. So I really had to trick myself to doing these things. Now, this stuff didn't last very long, sometimes just about a day, and then the scars would be gone, which is really weird because that doesn't usually happen.
Right.
So that kind of stuff was starting to go on, and it was kind of going on for about, you know, a couple more months. Then it started getting really bad, and when it got really bad, it was actually waking me up. I was being lifted up off the ground, choked, dropped. It would think would come up, pick me up again, hold me up to the wall, squeezed almost all the life out of me, and dropped me on the bed again. And that was continually happening. And it was starting to tell me to do some horrible things to my parents and do some horrible things to my brother. And, you know, it was affecting my grades because I was not sleeping very well, but it didn't affect them that bad. I was actually able to overcome most of this stuff. But I never really wanted to tell anybody either because of the experience I had back in, you know, when I was 8.
Right.
So I actually never had any friends come over either. Seeing spirits and hearing spirits and then seeing this stuff really kind of put me away from everybody because I'm like, I don't want anybody to see what's going on with me. So I didn't really have many friends, and I really isolated myself. But one time I decided to let one of my friends come over, and we had a sleepover, and that was my biggest mistake. Now, this kid in 8th grade was about 6'2", 230 pounds. He was huge. So we're sitting up there one night. We're just having fun, and the shadow appeared. And he's like, "How are you making that shadow? It's dark in here." And I said, "Believe me, just leave it alone. Just it's probably just something." And I was trying to just blow it off. He goes, no, look at it. He goes, the place is feeling weird. He goes, what's going on? I said, just ignore it. Just do what you got to do and just ignore it. And
yeah.
He didn't. So what he did is he picked up something, I believe it was a shoe, and threw it at the thing to see what was going on. Well, that thing got so enraged, it picked him up, threw him up against the wall, choked him down to the point where he couldn't breathe, and then threw him across the room. Now, that was like, I'm sitting there thinking to myself, man, if it can lift him up with ease, could you imagine what it's going to do to me? You know, I was maybe 110 pounds wet, you know,
right.
And so that kind of really got me into this area where this is not good. I don't know what to do about it right now, but I have to do something. And as time went on, I never had anybody else over. He left earlier that night, which I don't blame him. And just other things would start to happen, and it came out to me one night, and I guess it was getting to the point where it was going to try to force me to do something or hurt somebody. So I actually woke up outside of my body it was pretty much the night before the last time I was going to deal with it. And I saw it for the first time, and it wasn't this beastly, ugly looking thing like you'd normally see or picture a demon to be. It was actually a very handsome looking man, but he had two nubs on his head. And that was it. And it was just, you know, black eyes, and you can just see, it was like somebody you would trust, you know, just if you saw them, you would actually trust them. And he told me, he showed me over the body, he's like, this is what I can do to you. He goes, and he took me to my parents' room, he goes, if you don't do what I'm going to tell you to do, he goes, I'm going to kill your mother, I'm going to kill your brother, and I'm going to kill your father. It took me to see every one of them. I saw them all sleeping. And then I got put back in my own body. I woke up and everything was just completely like, what the heck just happened? And that really scared me. And I really realized how strong this particular entity was and how evil it was. And then shortly after that, I decided to take matters in my own hands. And I'm like, you know, nobody's going to believe me. I don't know how to get rid of it. So the only thing I could do was I used my ability to use free will and the power of God to get rid of it. And sure enough, it got rid of it. But what I never could understand was how easy I got rid of it. Usually you see these pastors and stuff like that. Sometimes they go for hours fighting these things. But this
right.
didn't take me very long, and I couldn't understand why. And I didn't really understand why until just about 3 years ago. But, you know, before you get into something like that, I actually had another experience which happened just shortly afterwards. And I think it was like the calm after the storm, you know, like everything was better. But, man, what an intense situation that was, and it's something I never really want to experience again.
Yeah, I don't blame you. That sounds horrible. I mean, I've heard some demon stories before, but, you know, the physical interaction, I think, is what freaks people out. When they're actually, you know, physically interacting with you, causing you pain, lifting you, you know, you expect them to try and get you to do bad things, you know, I mean, that kind of makes sense. But the physical interaction when they're actually causing you physical harm, that's really very scary. That, you know, I mean, how do you handle that as a child? How did you not want to go screaming to you? Did you tell your parents? How did you handle that?
I was a lot stronger than most kids, and I still am. But I also realized that, you know, because I was going through confirmation classes, and they said that the biggest thing that God gave us when he died on the cross and when he was here with us is our ability to use free will. We can choose to let things happen, and I chose not to let this thing bother me, and I chose not to let it do whatever it was going to do or wanted me to do, because once I did that, I was going to give into it. So that was what really got me through most of this. But I didn't want to tell anybody because I didn't want anybody to think I'm nuts again, you know. I really did hide it very well. But it was very tough. I mean, it was a life changing event. Luckily, this time I was a little bit older, but I always felt protected. I always felt that, you know, there was an angel there. There was somebody there that was not going to let this happen to me as long as I decided not to allow it, not to give in to what it wanted.
So how did you reconcile, I guess, in your own mind? Because if you're not sharing a lot of this with your parents, and you can't really talk to your teachers and even your friends about it, I guess I'm wondering how do you come to understand these abilities are psychic, that you're having psychic experiences, and did it go beyond being able to see ghosts? Were you able to communicate with them? Were they able to, I mean, you know, did they talk to you besides the evil one who obviously tried to get you to do bad things? But did any of did you see somebody who, any of your deceased relatives or, you know, anybody that told you who they were, anything like that?
I did. I could read energies off of people, and I didn't understand why. I'd walk into like these big huge rooms of people, and I don't like to go around them because it was so loud. It's just like I didn't like to touch people because it's like I could see things about them. I just didn't want to know, and
right.
That was really hard. So I really became a recluse. I mean, a self independent recluse. I did what I needed to do. I was friendly to everybody around me, but I would never touch anybody, and I was very careful of what I went to. So, I mean, for me, not going to parties when I was younger, no big deal. And I still don't go to clubs. I don't do any of that kind of stuff. I don't like to go to 4th of July parties. I don't like to go to New Year's Eve parties, and my wife, it drives her nuts, but I can't handle it because I know what I'm going to feel when I go to these places. And that's one of, you know, so I kind of pulled myself away from a lot of these things, but you know, I did see like other ghosts, and I saw spirits, and I was able to talk to spirits, and that's actually what kind of happened right after I got out of this demonic thing. I had a dream, and this dream was so real, I almost couldn't believe that it was a dream. I woke up, I actually went to try to recreate everything, because like I said, it was so real, it was so amazing, I didn't want it to end. But basically what ended up happening was I had this dream, and I got up to go to school, walked in my bathroom, got changed, and as I was getting changed, I was down in my underwear, and I hear this little giggling voice coming through the window. I actually didn't know it was through the mirror at the time, but I was like, what the heck is that? So I started looking around, and there was this girl looking at me in the mirror. I'm like, oh, my God, you know? So I'm, like, trying to cover myself up. She goes, don't worry. She goes, I've already seen it. So she goes, it's not, you know, don't bother covering up for me. So I'm like, okay. So I put on a towel, and I'm sitting there trying to figure out. I'm like, how did you get in there? And she goes, my mom put me in here. I'm like, why would your mom do that? So it was kind of like this big, huge thing. And I'm like, can you get out of that mirror or go anywhere? She goes, no, I'm stuck in the mirror. So, you know, what I did is every day from that point on, I'd come home, I'd talk to her, and she became my best friend. It was like a love, but not a love of a girl that you'd want to be intimate with. It was like a connection that I couldn't grasp, almost like the love of a sister or a mother or a friend or something like that. So she became my best friend. And towards the end of the dream, I said, well, what if I could break you out of this? What if I could take you away and break this curse for you? And she goes, I'd love that. But she goes, I don't know how. It's pretty permanent. I said, well, can you show up in any mirror anywhere? She goes, I don't know, maybe. So I went inside my room. I pulled out this little pocket mirror that I had, and I said, appear to me. And she appeared in this mirror. And from that point on, I could take her anywhere. She could see anything that I saw. She was with me everywhere. And we became the best of friends, and then I woke up. And ironically, one thing I did forget was she told me that her clothes were buried underneath the sink in the vanity. And that's where I got her clothes out, and I kept them all with me so nobody else would know that I knew that she was there. And that was pretty much what gave it the power. Well, I woke up from night dream, and I'm like, wow, that was amazing. I cannot believe this, how real this was. And so I ran into the vanity. I looked underneath it. There was this hole in there, and I reached in there, and sure enough, I pulled out this little friendship bracelet that girls used to make back in the day. I still have that thing. And I couldn't believe that, first of all, there was a hole in there. Second of all, that there was something in there that belonged to a girl. And I actually carried a mirror around with me just in case this thing is ever true. And it took me years to figure out what this dream meant. But actually, about 3 years ago, I was told that I had a deceased twin sister, and I never knew about it.
Okay.
And I believe that was the first time, right after my experience with this demon, I believe that she was able to, it strengthened me and it strengthened her enough, because I believe that she was actually the one that helped me get rid of this demon that easily, because I couldn't have done it my own. I was still too young, and we were the same age. And ironically, when I did this, I think it was her way of actually breaking down that wall of death and letting me know that she was there. But I just didn't know who she was until just a few years ago. And then from that point on, I always knew that something was missing my entire life. I just didn't know what it was. And when I heard that, my entire life made sense. I felt that void that I was missing and searching for gone. And since then, I've actually been able to put a lot of things into focus. And dealing with spirits and accepting my abilities that I've had, as opposed to just shunning them and trying to run away from them. And that really is what's helped me. And since I've known about this, I believe my power has been actually a little bit more intensified than before.
So you think that this spirit that you were seeing in the mirror was or could have been your twin sister, but you weren't able to actually... I mean, was that a dream that you had, or was that an actual experience that happened?
Like I said, I'm still trying to figure that out. But, I mean, it was so real, it felt like a dream, but I truly believe it was a dream because I did wake up the next morning. But I believe that it was almost like one of those out-of-body experiences. I've heard of people having, when they pass away, that people have actually come back to them in these dreams, and it actually feels like they're outside of where they are. It's like they're taken to the other dimension.
Yeah.
and can talk to
yeah.
these people.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It was very important that I met her. And I think for the longest time, she was trying to tell me she was there, and I didn't know about it. Like I said, she actually died in utero. She, you know, back then, they just threw them away as medical waste. So
right.
There was no death certificate. There was no birth certificate. There was no grave. I never knew she existed.
Wow.
And, you know, usually there's something to let you know that they're there, and there's that comfort, but I never had that. And I think that I was actually able to see things and have more of a, it's like a part of me is dead, but a part of me is alive at the same time. You know, we're the same person. So it really made things a lot more complex for me, but it made more sense as I got older, and I'm really happy I do. I actually feel peaceful and content, and, you know, I talk to her all the time. And, you know, she has actually come out and saved me. I actually believe I'm one of the most protected people I've ever met. There have been many, many times where I should have died. And ironically, at the last second, things just kind of turned the other way. It's been amazing.
I was going to ask you about that. You actually had a true, I guess, near-death experience, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, actually I did. That was in 2009. Actually, this weekend is when it happened. It was the weekend before October, and I was dressed up in my football outfits, and you know the football jerseys that they have, you know, they're nylon, they don't breathe too well. I had long pants on. I had a shirt underneath it because it's my superstition that I got to wear all this stuff, you know, and otherwise my team won't win. And it was still very hot. We had a very hot season here in Florida, and it was probably about 96 degrees even in September. And I went outside. I was going to get in my car and take off for a little bit. And as I got in my car, I had a sugar attack. And the sugar attack actually caused me to go into like a sugar coma. I was sitting in my car. The windows were rolled up. The doors were locked because I had engaged the key. and it was so blasted hot in there. I was actually cooking myself. I know what it's like to sit inside a car and cook, but I couldn't do anything about it. And I could see, I could feel myself getting weaker and weaker and weaker and weaker, and then I eventually just passed out. I was gone. And I had woken up in this, what I felt like was another world. I mean, I was walking down this hallway, and I didn't know where I was going. And as I went down this hallway, I went to this one particular section where there was two doors. One of them, I looked down, and all I heard was screaming and wailing and the total absence of love, if that's even capable to comprehend. And then on the other one, there was just this bright light. It was gorgeous. And so that's the one I went to, obviously. And when I went through there, I wasn't there long. I wasn't there long at all. And I started to see the girl in the mirror. She came running to me, and I didn't know she was my twin at the time. And she goes, look, you're not supposed to be here yet. And I said, well, why not? She goes, believe me, you're not supposed to be here. She grabbed me by my arm. I said, well, I don't want to go. And she goes, you're going with me. And then I woke up. And then when I woke up, I was outside of my car. The doors were still locked. The keys were still engaged. And no windows were broken. But it allowed me to get my cool back up and my adrenaline kicked back up, so I didn't lose my I didn't lose any more of my sugar. My sugar was actually able to rekindle itself, and I woke up outside my car, and it was an act of God, because there's no way I should be alive today.
Wow, that's amazing. And nobody was around that saw anything or pulled you out of the car or anything like that.
And they really couldn't have unless they had my keys, a spare set of keys. Without shattering the window.
Right. Wow, that's amazing. So I'm assuming that all these different experiences help to motivate you, inspire you to write your book, A Haunted Soul. What is your book about, and what are you covering your real life? You know, situations in the book. What is it? What's in it?
Well, after that near death experience, I also had a time where my best friend had committed suicide, and I had this vision, and I believe it was him talking to me from the grave, because I pretty much put my entire life on stop. You know, I was so upset and mourning over the past, and I wasn't living for the future.
Right.
And he kept giving me this vision, and I had to put it on a photograph. So I photographed it, and everybody's like, whoa, what the heck is going on with that? You know, they're like, that's so crazy. And I'm like, well, you know, I kept telling it and telling it and telling it and telling it. And then finally I realized, you know what, a lot of my, because I started realizing that I was taking a lot of my pictures and putting them into things that happened to me when I was younger. You know, I photographed the demon and the demon experience that I had, and I photographed a dream where I was woke up in a casket. And I was trapped. And so I put all these together, and people are like, man, you're sick. You're nuts. And I'm like, well, I'm really not nuts. This is really what happened to me. And so I figured the best thing to do was to put it into a book and break the silence of what I've been going through my entire life. And so really what it has is it has some of my artwork that I explained of why I did it. It goes into my first experience with a ghost. It goes into my demonic experience that I had. It goes into some of the other protected items that I have. Where I've, you know, actually, it should have turned out a lot worse than it should have, and it goes into my sister. It goes into all kinds of things that I've lived through, and I'm just hoping that it actually hits people to realize that, you know, if you're seeing things or you're doubting things, don't doubt yourself, because it might be there. But when I try to also explain that not everything is haunted. You know, there are a lot of things that can be easily explained through science and things that we just don't think about. And, you know, so therefore, don't doubt yourself, but also try to find the root of everything that comes with it. And if you are psychic or if you have these things, you know, embrace it, because there's nothing you can do about it. And the more you try to fight it, the more you turn into a recluse like me, and you really kind of lose out a lot of the good times in your childhood and adulthood too, depending on how you handle it.
So the book is full of pictures that you've taken of all of different things you've experienced?
That's correct. It has some pictures, but it also has some stories that I just didn't photograph or anything like that. So, you know, my idea of it was to explain what I'm seeing things and how I'm doing things and who I am as a person. And I'm hoping people that never got the chance to learn to embrace that will see my visions and see what I see as best as I can portray them on film, but also experience what the world has to offer and don't be closed-minded. You know, I was very closed-minded for a long time. I didn't want to accept what I was going through and what I was living. But by doing that, I wasn't accepting myself. And, you know, it took me 20-something years to really accept that. And I really sat back and looked back at myself. I'm like, man, look at all the time and good things I missed. And I'm like, I don't want anybody to go through that. And I also want people that have gone through these particular instances to realize that, you know, sometimes you have to talk to somebody about it. I didn't, you know, but I just didn't find the right people to talk to. And, you know, I want people to be able to talk to me about anything. You know, I may be able to prove that it's not a ghost, and that's okay. Be open-minded about it. But, you know, try to get an answer. You know, I've seen a lot of things where I thought it was a ghost, and it wasn't a ghost. And that's why I try to explain in the book, you know, you are protected. You have this great world that's so diverse. And the more closed-minded you are, the harder it is to understand other people and understand yourself as well.
Now, I know, you know, one of the most popular pictures that people, I get them sent to me all day long, every day. People send me pictures of orbs that are in a photograph, and they'll be like, what is this, you know? And I get a lot of that. And I know you have a kind of controversial opinion on orbs. Can you share that with us?
Yeah. As a photographer, I studied photography for years. I've been doing it professionally for 12 years, and I was doing it as a hobby beforehand. And one of the things that you learn about photography is light. Now, when you think of an orb is actually a disembodied ball of energy. Now, anytime you go and see energy anywhere, you can physically see it. When you go plug in an outlet and you see a spark, you're seeing the energy. When you see lightning, you see an energy. When you see fire, that's energy. You see it because it burns. It creates a heat sensor. Now, when you actually take a picture with a photograph using flash, you're actually giving the energy you're giving the energy to the area that you need to take pictures of, especially in the dark.
Uh-huh.
Generally, what you're doing is you're capturing just a really small piece of dust, or you're capturing a small bug. And people are like, well, yeah, but I didn't see it there. Well, if it's energy, you should see it. No matter what you do, you will see energy. Energy is all around us. I mean, you see the sun is energy. You see electricity, electricity is energy. So therefore, you should see it with your own naked eye. I've only seen in my entire lifetime one what I believe is to be a true orb, and it was almost more like a plasma streak. But the way that it came about was we were at a cemetery, completely chilled that particular area of the cemetery, and this big orange ball of fire just appeared out of nowhere and started shooting across. And as I took the picture, I took it without flash, so there was no extra light that was added to it. And it was when I got the picture, I could actually see it was vaporizing the energy in front of it, and there was like a vapor trail behind it. So you could actually see that it was absorbing the extra energy that it needed to manifest itself. So those are what I truly believe is to be an orb. I mean, it could be an orb, but there's so many particles in the air that we don't see. We can't see it because they're microscopic. And just because you can't see it doesn't mean that the sensitive eye on the camera, when hit with the right flash in the right particular angle, won't see it. If it's farther away, generally you're going to see it's going to be more translucent. And it's almost going to be almost to the point of not even visible at all. If it's closer, you're going to see it a little bit more defined. But you see that onion look to it. And the way people, another reason why they don't understand how these things work is that when you take a picture with flash, even though it's a square, light travels in a cone. And the best way best example of that is go to a dark room that's really kind of far away, step back as far as you can and shoot. What you're going to see is on the other side of the wall, you're going to see a circle. And that's because of the fact that that's the shape of light. And so when you're taking a shape of light, it's going to bounce off whatever it's bouncing off as a cone coming back to you. That's why they're generally circles and not any other type of shape. So, you know, the harder thing is to to distinguish is actually when you're capturing a bug. But usually when you see these things, it doesn't come out as orange. It doesn't really come out as anything. It comes out as white. And that's because of the fact that's the same type of light that you're shooting off of your flash. Your flash is actually a very cold light. If it starts to generate heat and some, you know, a little bit higher temperature. It doesn't have to be that hot. It's going to start to turn different colors, and it's going to start to turn, you know, orange, red, and then even blue. Blue is the absolute hottest. But what you're seeing in these pictures is not blue. What you're actually seeing is a white light, and that's because it's the coldest light that you have. So, you know, there's different angles to orbs, and you really have to study them. I mean, I went out to this one place, and they said, yeah, there's orbs all over the place. You stand outside, you take a picture, sure enough, there's 3,000 orbs. But what they fail to tell people is that when you're using the flash, you're also standing outside on this dirt driveway that cars are coming back and forth with. There's wind blowing all around. And can you really tell me that 3,000 people died at this one particular area? You know, I mean, there's so much doubt to it. But then there's also, what if it is a real orb? But none of them could see it with their own two eyes. You know what I mean?
Have you ever been able to take a photograph of like a true spirit, not an orb, but like something where you could actually see its facial features or bodily features?
I kind of have, but actually it was kind of more of a matrix, and I had to throw it out. But the craziest thing that ever happened to me, I was out in Dade City, Florida at the Pioneer Museum, and that's basically, it's a museum of all these old houses from all around the county that they bring together so people can come see them and walk through them and experience lifetime back in that particular era. And they had this really cool kitchen set up, and it was basically 1850s, 1860s type era, and I wanted to take a picture of this to put into somebody's kitchen. You know, it's very old fashioned, it's very countryish. So mm-hmm. I sat my camera up on a tripod, got it all set up to the way I wanted. I did not want to use flash because if I had used flash, it would have taken the warmth and the patina out of the picture. So mm-hmm. I stood back to try to kind of get an idea of what I was looking at and seeing how my lens was going to look, because sometimes you got to look not only through the lens but around the lens as well. And as I stepped back, my camera actually took a picture by itself. I could hear it go click, click. And I was like, okay, that's really weird. So then I went up there and took immediately a picture after that. What I caught was with the one by itself was this big, huge mist that came out of nowhere. It almost looked like the window was like super exposed, with like sunlight coming in and hitting like somebody smoking a cigarette. And the second one I took, which was literally about 2.5 seconds after that, was completely dark, exactly the way that I had wanted it. And the sun was still in the same spot. And actually, there really wasn't much sun coming in, just a little bit on the table, and that was because of the fact that it had a huge eave over it. And that was the only time I think I've actually caught something that was paranormal. I mean, first of all, there was no smog there for me to see anything. But at that point in time, the energy is so dispersed that it's to the point of almost being transparent. You know what I mean? It's not like it wasn't made itself into this big ball of energy yet to where I could see it. But I can't actually prove that it's a spirit either. I mean, I can't even prove an orb is a spirit. All I can say with an orb is that it's paranormal. You know, there's a big difference between a paranormal and a haunting. A paranormal is just something that defies the laws of physics as we know it and science as we know it. So it could be a ghost. It might not be a ghost. It might just be something we don't understand yet, but a haunting is an actual spirit. But I was up in Georgia, and there was a courthouse where they actually used to lynch people upstairs in the execution room. And I took a picture of what I thought was an actual spirit sitting there looking at me through the window. But when I really realized it and really looked at it, all it was a matrix thing. So, you know, it's to understand photography and ghosts, it's really tough. It's, you know, and people don't want to hear that. And I could tell people it's not a ghost, or I could tell people it is a ghost, but if they don't want to believe it, they're not going to believe it. And if they want to believe it's a spirit, they're going to believe it's a spirit. So, you know, I can only give my opinion to anybody, but you know, that's kind of what I got to try to go with. And I try to tell people to keep an open mind, because catching spirits on film is probably one of the hardest things you're going to have to do. And you know, it takes the perfect setting. It's going to take the perfect amount of light. And I prefer not to use flash because that instantaneously throws things off. When you use flash, you can create shadows that you didn't even know that you were creating. You know, you can get reflections off things, and therefore it really kind of discredits everything. When you can go into a room and take a picture without flash, and you can catch something, you have a lot better chance and a lot better. With a lot more integrity towards the picture than you would if you just went in there and started shooting flash. People don't realize how flash can bounce, and flash can bounce really well. I was out in Hernando County over here taking pictures of a haunted house, and in this one room that they did, it was a bedroom of this house, and they turned it into this museum, which is now the schoolroom. And they said, if you stand in this one spot and take a picture at this window, every time you see a face in this window, I'm like, wow, I've never seen a ghost just come on demand, you know, and they're looking in. So I said, okay, I'll buy this. So I said, this lady went out there, took a picture with her camera. Sure enough, there was a face. I'm like, wow, that's amazing. I mean, this thing looked really, really, really defined. So I got up there, took a picture with my camera, and I was using my professional camera, same flash, everything. And I didn't get a face. And that kind of freaked everybody out. And I'm like, they're like, what is that? I said, you know what that is? That is the light. It's like one of those old canister lights. It looked like a hurricane lamp with like one of those glass globes on top of it,
right.
Shades on top of it. Well, what it was doing was the way it was bouncing, the windows were actually blown glass. And so when it reflected, some of those angles were a little bit off. So it would bounce it off the wall. It bounces off the wall behind us, which was a blackboard, which was slate, which actually had a reflective surface, not something that would absorb it like it was back in the day. And when the light bounced back off of it, it caught the light on the desk, which then came up to the window, and with the way that the window kind of moved a little bit, it turned it into what looked like a face. And I was like, wow, that's really interesting, because it completely blew their entire story that they were looking at. But it's just amazing how light can bounce, even though you're not even looking at it. When you're looking at the picture, to take the picture, the desk is behind you. Why would light even ricochet off of that? But it does.
Right.
And see, that's why it's really hard to make a true account of a ghostly entity in any type of photo if you have to use flash. Best thing to do is to use like an infrared camera or those heat sensing cameras, because they don't use light. They use the heat that's in the room. Therefore, you can actually see something there that shouldn't be there.
Yeah, that stuff blows my mind when I see that on, you know, different shows on TV and everything, somebody using infrared, and I'm like, well, you can't make that stuff up. I mean, you can. It's TV. Because anything, you can make anything up for TV. But if it's, you know, if it really happened, that's way more impressive than, I agree with the orbs and things like that, because it is hard to tell whether it's a reflection or a refraction maybe of the light. So anyway, we're coming to the end of the segment. So what I want to do is I want to give you an opportunity to tell everybody how they can get in contact with you, where they can see your work, your website, and where they can buy your book, too, because, that's obviously something you want to promote. Is it on Kindle? Is it at Barnes & Noble? Is it at, where is it?
Okay. Best thing to do if you want to see my book and my work is go to my website, Dowd Studios, DOWDstudios.com. I have a page up there for my book, and there's links to everything. So if you have a Kindle, if you have a Nook, it's on there. It gives you a direct link to it. You can also buy a hard copy book, which if you buy it from there, I will go ahead and autograph it and send it to you. If you buy it directly from the manufacturer, I can't sign it because it comes directly drop ship. If you want to talk to me about anything spiritual, if you wanted me to look at your evidence, your videos that you have, you know, you can upload them to YouTube, send them to me. You can send me your photos. I'd be happy to look at them. I have no problem doing that. And if you know, people also if they want to do like readings, I do pendulum readings. I do tarot card readings, and I also just kind of help them out in other ways. So, you know, I try to show them each area of what could possibly be there and what might not be there. So it helps them educate themselves as well. And if you want to do that, you can go on to my website. There's a contact form there. You can also go to sales@dowdstudios.com. That one does not have a spam filter on there, so I will get all that information. And I check it every day, sometimes, you know, multiple times a day. So, you know, if you send me something, I will get it to you, and we'll, I'd be happy to talk with you. There's also my phone numbers on there if you want to go on there and give me a call. No problem with that. I love talking about ghosts, about any type of ghost.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate you being on the show. It's really, really interesting stuff. And everybody, go out and check out A Haunted Soul, which is Jason's book, or and visit his website, which is dowdstudios.com. And you'll find his book there and all the information about him, and I'm sure some of his very cool pictures. And I appreciate your being on the show. Thank you very much, and hopefully you'll be able to come back and tell us some more stories someday.
Love to. It was a great pleasure to be on here.
All right. Thank you very much, Jason.
Thank you.
All right, everybody, hang on. We have another guest coming up in just a few minutes. If everybody can, we're just gonna get through a couple commercials, and then we'll be back in a minute.
You're listening to the Right Stream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Right Stream and hashtag Right Stream. Thanks for listening to the Right Stream Radio Network.
I'll never get used to these 10-mile runs. They are taking so much time out of my day.
Are you training for a marathon or something?
Diabetes runs in my family, and I heard if you lose lots of weight, you can prevent it. So I started running like crazy, and I cut my calories big time.
Oh, get real. You don't have to knock yourself out to prevent diabetes. My doctor said it's the small lifestyle changes you make that matter, because it's easier to stick to them.
Wow, really?
It worked for me. 6 months ago, I started walking a lot, and I stopped eating the fried stuff. I've lost 10 pounds. My doctor said I'm doing great.
I'll have to ask my doctor about this. I'd love to get my life back.
Talk to your healthcare provider. Losing a small amount of weight by being active 30 minutes, 5 days a week, and eating healthier can prevent type 2 diabetes. To get your free game plan for preventing type 2 diabetes, call 1-800-438-5383. This is a message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the National Diabetes Education Program.
Hi, this is Jennifer Coolidge. The American Heart Association says the disco song Stayin' Alive is the near-perfect beat for hands-only CPR. If you see a teen or adult collapse from cardiac arrest, you only need 2 steps to help save a life. Call 911 and push hard and fast in the center of the chest to the beat of the song Stayin' Alive. Disco is back and it's saving lives. To learn more, go to heart.org/hands-only-CPR.
Nationally supported by the WellPoint Foundation.
Hi, this is Lisa Tarvis. I'm a metaphysician, board-certified holistic health practitioner, energy healer, intuitive, and the author of the book, Just Believe. I'm also a host on the Right Stream Network. My radio show is called Just Believe and airs every Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern. Please stop by my website at www.lisatarvis.com. That's L-I-S-A-T-A-R-V-E-S. For details on all the services I offer, information on my book, and my radio show. There are many amazing guests and fascinating topics scheduled for the show in the upcoming months. I look forward to connecting with you soon.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back. This is Just Believe Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Tarvis. Just had Jason Dowd on. That was very interesting. Information on paranormal and then photographs and things like that. Next, I'm going to have on a lady who she's. It's so funny because earlier I got a tweet from Daria, who is the creator of our network, the Right Stream Network, and she said you're starting it all with scary paranormal stuff, and you're going to end it with how to fall asleep nice and calmly every night. So you know, better than the reverse, I guess. We didn't want to end with the paranormal stuff, so. Anyway, I'm going to probably, as I do every week, butcher her name, but I think it's Armenta. Lisa Armenta has been the happy wife of Chris since 1997 and the proud mother to her son, Sterling, who was born in 1999. daughter Samantha, who joined in 2002, and son Spencer, who completed the family in 2007. Lisa loves to problem solve, and her career as an author began as she felt the deep need to share her dancing method that she perfected after a decade to get her kids to sleep. Her passion is to keep improving the quality of her life, the life of her family and others, and truly believes gentle goodnight can do that for babies and their moms. So I want to bring her on. I love sleep methods, and I'm telling you, sleeping is a big challenge for me. It always has been. I think it's just one of those things. I try visualizing all kinds of happy scenarios, and I do meditation, and I do, you know, I'll do relaxation techniques and all that stuff, and still my mind is, it's so hard when you're trying to sleep and you're so tired, and then you're pressuring yourself to sleep. So, you know, and I know so many people and my friends and family and things that suffer with the same thing. So any kind of new method of sleeping is awesome. So I want to introduce Lisa. Lisa, did I ruin your last name?
No, it was perfect. No butchering.
Oh, how about that? Every week I'm always butchering everybody's name. They're like, yeah, not even close. I'm glad I got yours right. So, tell me about, you know, this is this a book? Is this a CD? What is this? Gentle Goodnight.
It is a book. It's a step-by-step how-to method. Real cut to the chase, no fluff, no just details. It's written at a fifth or sixth grade level and with a new mom with no experience in mind, so it's very easy to read, and it's short for the new mom also who doesn't have time to read a full book.
yeah, it's that's a big thing. Time when you're a new mom,
right.
You don't have a lot of time. And I know the book is getting excellent reviews. It's been out about a year, right? And it's getting great reviews on Amazon and things like that. People are really finding it to be really helpful. So explain how the sleep method works. What exactly is involved?
Well, it's truly multitasking at its best. You're getting your baby down to nap or to bed in a fun, enjoyable way for both of you, but you're also getting the daily exercise that makes you feel good inside and out, especially for a new mom. And how it works is you're seeing what your baby's energy level is before it's time to dance. And with that information, you pick a song that is close to that energy level. So, say, if they're pretty active and if they're going to need some calming down, that case you will start with the volume louder, a song with a stronger beat, and you're dancing faster. And then when the energy starts coming down, you move to medium tempo, soft rock songs, and then you're ending with ballads as their energy level is, you know, they're falling asleep or asleep. And that's basically how it works. You're using music. It's an alternative to cry it out methods for
right.
moms that when I was a new mom, there wasn't many alternatives. Excuse me, I have a cold. At all for new moms besides the cry it out method or nursing or rocking, which took a long time. And you don't always want to rock or nurse all night.
Right. How long does it take, and does it? How long does the whole thing start? Do you have like, are you constantly like flipping through music, or do you? How does that work?
Well, you can have a playlist on your iPod, or I would have just a CD, and I'd have my remote, and you feel like a DJ switching back songs. You know, it's real easy with a remote though to switch back. You know what number the song is. For the fast song, and then you go to the medium song, and just anything will basically work. I used to use cable TV with the different stations on the TV to flip around. They don't really notice if you keep moving to finding a song that's suitable for where they're at, how awake they are.
So you're basically taking it from the very beginning when you're like, obviously you're not going to use this technique Well, I'm not going to say it like that. Would you use this technique? Say your baby falls asleep in the car, and you bring them up to their crib, and you lay them in their crib, or it's a young child, and you lay them in their bed, and they're, you know, when how you first lay them down, and they're kind of just, you know they're going to fall asleep really quick, but not necessarily, they're not necessarily still asleep. Would you use this starting with just one of the ballads or something, or would you not use it at all?
Yeah, that's a good point. If I were to do it when they're bringing them in from the car when they're still very sleepy, I would put on a ballad and just make sure they go back down to sleep and then put them down.
Yeah, I would think that would work. I think that would work really, really well too. And now my interest in this is I don't have babies anymore. Mine are all teenagers now, and God willing, I won't be a grandmother anytime soon. But I had a colicky baby. My son, who's going to turn 20 next month, he was a colicky pain in the butt. Oh my God, that kid would not sleep. There was nothing I could do. He just, it was just horrible. He slept in little spurts, and it was the longest 6 months of my life. So, and that was my first. So, it's not a great method to really have more than one child in your family either. But my doctors used to say all the time, let them cry it out, let them cry it out. You know what? I'm sorry, but that not only is stressful for the parents who are just sitting there wanting to throw up the entire time, because that's how I felt. I just was sick letting him cry like that. And most times I couldn't get through it. In fact, I don't think I ever successfully got through it. It just took too long. I couldn't take it. But how can that, because a lot of what you're doing here, this technique is about their spiritual health, their spiritual evolution, what this is doing to them on a spiritual level, crying it out versus what you're teaching. I don't know if that was even a question, but I think you probably know where I'm going with this. Can you maybe explain because this is a spiritual show, people are like, all right, wait a minute, we're learning how to put our babies to sleep. And this isn't just for babies. This can be used for anyone. It's, anyone who has trouble sleeping, I guess. It just happens to be really good for children because the mom can do the dancing. So anyway, if you can explain the spiritual side of it, that'd be great.
Well, I think, like you were saying, that it felt so wrong. I think there's a reason for that. Instinctually, you're feeling that it's so wrong because I think there's just a better way. New parents need to hear the pros and cons of all sleep methods and then carefully decide, how this could be affecting their baby's brain development as well as affecting their future relationships. And there was a study done, you said you've been out of the loop, I guess, for 20 years, since you've had babies. So there's instinctually it felt wrong, but now there's evidence supporting why it's wrong. And there was a study in the Journal of Early Human Development, and I don't really need scientific-based studies to know that it felt wrong to me. Do it, but people do. And so, but the testing was done in a non-invasive way by measuring saliva levels of the stress hormone cortisol from the mom and the baby for a few days while they were letting them cry. And, excuse me, both mothers and the babies had high cortisol levels, at the beginning of the study, of course, because mom was listening to the baby cry and baby was crying. But by the third day, the babies were crying less as they were being trained, quotes, to sleep. And mother's cortisol levels were going down as they were hearing the baby cry less. But the part that's so important to me is that the baby's cortisol level, when they were not crying, were still as high as when they were crying. So what it's really teaching them is that their feelings, they don't need to express their feelings anymore, because why bother? It's not helping anyway. My mom is still going to let me cry until I fall asleep. So they're in essence retreating inside themselves, thinking they're not able to count on these people. And, with a show like yours, your listeners are already have their minds open to, even if they're not consciously remembering these memories, it's still a part of who they are. It's and people now, you know, with all the sleep medication that's being sold, people are learning that this might have had something to do with why they can't sleep, why it's such a stressful thing for them to fall asleep. They can't recall the memories, but it's a part of who they are subconsciously, and they're, you know, it's some people are making the connection, but I think more people, if they thought of it and asked their parents, maybe that connection would be a little easier to just deal with, and then maybe it would help them sleep in the future.
Yeah, I keep thinking, you know, all the times when you go to sleep at night and, you know, maybe you've just had a huge fight with your spouse, or maybe you, you know, something's happened with one of your children that's caused you to be completely stressed out, and you go to bed and you're at that stress level. And first of all, I don't believe we get to a deep sleep, a real deep sleep, when we're at that level. Not only that, I know for me, I'll have horrible dreams all night. You know, I'll have bad
right.
dreams. And when I go to sleep and I'm in a peaceful place, a happy place, I'll have nice dreams, and dreams not you know, dreams that maybe, you know, I talk a lot about dreams and the fact that I believe we visit the other side, you know, the other side, maybe the spirit realm. I think I visit with my mom who passed away 5 years ago. I think we have visits, but I have to be in the right frame of consciousness. And or unconsciousness, so to speak. And so I mean, it just would make sense to me that, you know, obviously you want your child to have good experiences with, you know, sleep, with not only sleep, but while they're sleeping,
right.
Something
how they went
good.
To sleep.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Sleeping, something good, something positive, something, you know, not something to fear, you know, because it's like, oh, my God, here we go. We're going to start, you know, the next family war, you know, begins tonight at bedtime, you know.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, so I really do like the concept. And the interesting thing is, to me, you know, new moms, they're always asking advice. They're on the internet, obviously. Back in when my kids were little, there was no internet. So when my kids
right.
were babies, it was not something that I had as a method. I really depended on the pediatrician. And the pediatrician's idea of letting them cry it out, I was, you know, I did try it. But I got to tell you, it didn't feel right. And I was always one to kind of go with what felt right, not exactly what, you know, the doctor said to do. But what I'm wondering is, when, you know, new moms, they're exhausted and they're overwhelmed. They don't feel confident, you know, in what they're doing, especially if it's their first baby. They don't have any idea whether what they're doing wrong, that this, you know, baby won't sleep or the baby doesn't, whatever. So, you know, what if you're getting advice from people like me who would say, you know, at my age, my kids being older, I'd see a new mom and I'd be like, well, my doctor, my pediatrician would have told me, let them cry it out. And they're stuck between what they're hearing from their moms and their mom's friends and stuff like that, which is what we were taught, versus with gentle goodnight. How do you talk to a new mom? How do you get them to, you know, how would you give them advice when they're trying to struggle with what they're supposed to be doing?
Yeah, I think that's the way that your parents did it or your grandparents did it, that weighs very heavily on you. But it's not about, you know, or egos, or it's about babies now. You know, I get it that, you know, you want to follow your parents' advice, but it's, you know, you have to keep your mind open as everything. You should question and re-question things to see if it's, you know, the best thing for you now. But I would tell parents that just to treat their babies as you would want to be treated yourself in their situation. They're a stranger in this new world, and they can't speak, they can't move their body to get what they need, and they're like a totally helpless, dependent person. And in that situation, if I were in that situation, I would not want my cries ignored. And it's a form of communication, crying. It's not misbehavior. They're communicating it in the only way that they can. And even if they're just scared, they're just scared, then you should, that you have to respect that. And their needs are, their emotional needs are so important as their physical needs. You know, to me, it's equal.
So, this is so important, and I don't think that everyone realizes. I think that it's a problem for such a short period of time, but in the big scheme of things, but it's a huge problem. It's a very stressful problem. It's a problem that causes fights between spouses and stress in the family. But it's so important to think about, what you just said about, what if the child's scared? They don't have any other way of communicating. They can't speak. They can't yell. They can't sit there, "Hey, Mom, I had a bad dream." There is nothing like that. They wake up and they're crying, and all they know is that they are supposed to be comforted by these people who, have been taking care of them. And, and they don't know anything else. So your method of the music, for the most part, what are the ages you recommend people use this method for?
Well, I think the best time to start is when they're not sleeping all day, probably in 2 to 3 months of age, when they're not just nursing right down to sleep, or they're not just rocking down to sleep. You need a little extra effort to get them there. And I did it up until my kids were about 2.5, and they're heavier. You're dancing them. So it's not, as you had mentioned before, it is just, that's pretty much the cutoff to when they can be sleeping, on their own, or you choose another method to get them to sleep because of their weight. But as they're getting heavier, they're doing less naps, and you're keeping track of how much time should go between naps, so you're not dancing them before they're ready, because, as you mentioned also about just going to bed, you can't just expect to put a baby in bed and it's time for bed, go to sleep. You need a relaxing routine to get into that, and too many people expect too much of their new baby. You teach them everything. You need to instruct them also on relaxing for sleep, that this is a time that's not stressful. It's a time that's to be enjoyed, and this is how we do it.
So basically, you're holding your baby, and I keep thinking about when my daughter, who's 19 now, also, they're 10 and a half months apart. They're both 19 right now for 6 weeks. It's a little embarrassing, but whatever.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah, so with her, I remember doing things so differently, because what I would do is I would hold her, and I would kind of like bounce her around the room. I was kind of like bouncing her around the room. It wasn't what I called dance, but I was just like, and then I'd rub her forehead with my thumb, and she would fall asleep every time. And then I'd lay her in her crib, and she'd go right to sleep. With my son, it was like this battle, I never tried that with him. I just, I think you learn as you have kids. By the third one, you're a pro, you know what you're doing. But the first ones are guinea pigs, so to speak,
Exactly.
You kind of go from there. Is that basically what you're talking about? Is that how this method works? You're holding them, and are you bouncing them? Is that what this is?
Yeah, for nursing moms, they have a couple more positions. You can nurse and dance, which is really relaxing for the baby because they're used to that. They're in your stomach, you're constantly moving, and you're feeding them too. But if you're a dad or a caregiver, you can also use the method. You just hold the baby differently, and yes, you start dancing, and you don't need to be a good dancer. There's basic steps. You're playing off the three methods that people usually use, like side to side or front to back, using like a rocking chair or a swing, those kind of movements. And you can go in a shape of a box, you know, just bouncing them around or side to side in the shape of a box if you don't feel like dancing, or you can actually dance with the music. It's just up to you at what you're, as long as you go to the beat of the music and you're pretty even on both sides, that's all they like. They love the movement. I think that, again, we expect too much of them. They've been in your stomach for 9 months with constant movement, and now all of a sudden they are expected to be laid down or put in a swing, and, well, swing is fine, I think, because of the movement, but they really love
right.
the movement.
Yeah.
Of, that's what they're used to, and it's just, I think we expect too much. That's like,
I always say that. I think you're right. They go from this warm, comfortable, fluid-filled environment of, you know, of constant movement and constant, you know, just closeness to us, to all of a sudden
right.
being separated from us, and that's tough enough. But then to
right.
just look at the bed and say, okay, time to sleep and walk out. And, you know, you see this on TV, and I got to tell you, I see these shows on TV, and these stupid shows, and these are just like, you could just be watching, like, I don't know, you could be watching just some regular, you know, weekly show you watch. It doesn't have to be anything specific about children, but somebody has a baby, and you see the mom and dad just looking over the crib at this little gurgling baby who's smiling, and then they're like, good night, baby, and they walk
right.
out and shut the lights off. That does not happen.
Right.
That never happened to me one time ever. You
and
know?
Yes, and me too.
Yeah.
And it's a disservice.
So,
it's a disservice to the new parents that they think something's wrong with them because their baby's not doing that. And that's one of the main questions they get is your baby sleeping through the night? No, of course not. It's not sleeping through the night because it's not supposed to. You know, it's just so much pressure for these new parents. I feel terrible for them.
Yeah, I think it's really hard. I always feel really bad. I always tell everyone that I'm going to be the world's greatest grandma because I swear I am not only a grandma to the babies, but I get it for my kids, what they're going to be going through so much. I'm going to be
right.
coming to the you all the time.
For what they need. You know what they need. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just like, somebody just let me sleep 4 hours in a row. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
I remember 4 hours of sleep used to be like the most rejuvenating. I mean, I felt like a new person. 4 hours, just straight hours of sleep. those were horrible days. Anyway, but they were
I think
horrible,
cooking and cleaning
know.
For them too.
Yeah, and you don't know, and then you know, and a lot of us are you know working full time and you know still worrying about all the things that everybody else worries about on top of. You know, having no sleep and not knowing what you're doing wrong or if you're doing something wrong, feeling like you're
right.
not good enough, you know. It's just, it's a very stressful time. And I think there should be back when my kids were little, there was nothing. But now I know there are so many support groups. But we need more. We need, like, more in everybody's community where, you know, new moms can come and grandmoms can come over and, you know, and just babysit for a mom while she takes a nap. You know what I mean? Or do a couple
right.
loads of laundry for a new mom. I don't know. I just remember something like that would have been a godsend. And there was really no way to find that kind of help back then, but there certainly is now.
In some cultures there are where they take care of the mom for like the first 6 months where she's not even like allowed out of bed. She, you know, all she is to do is to nurse the baby and hold the baby and everybody else is cooking and cleaning and taking care of her. And that's really what you need. concentrate on your baby.
Because you know, I think back on my kids being babies and I think of it as being such a stressful, horrible time. Now, understand they were 10 and a half months apart. So basically,
right.
I was pregnant 6 weeks after I had my first. And,
right.
Well, 8 weeks, it was really, she was 2 weeks early, but, you know, those just little points. But it, you know, it was stressful. It's stressful on your body. I mean, pregnancy is stressful on your body.
Yeah.
It's so hard on you emotionally, your hormones, all the different things that are going on. People need support, especially moms, dads too, for sure. But I think dads get a little bit more. You know what I think for women is that the second we find out we're pregnant, we start feeling guilty. And, like, we're not doing everything good enough for our child. Like, we're not good enough for them. And I don't think that ever stops. I mean, my kids are adults now, and, except for one's 15. But they're all teenagers. And, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I don't know that it hasn't stopped. You don't ever feel like you're doing everything right. And I think a lot of times it's because we don't have somebody there with us saying, this is right, this is good. You know, don't overreact. This isn't a horrible, the baby's crying. That doesn't mean the world's about to come crashing in, It's just a cry. We'll figure out what's wrong and, everything will be fine. But you're just so stressed, you're in hypersensitive, stress. So tell me, with General Goodnight, what are the benefits of this book? What's the message in this book? And why do new moms and dads need to think about buying it?
Well, I think the first benefit is definitely peace of mind. You won't regret putting your baby to sleep using this method. I have the best memories of all three of my kids doing it with them, enjoying it. When I hear a song on the radio, I think, you used to like that song a lot. It's just a great memory. And as we mentioned before, you want your baby to wake up feeling all is right with the world. It's not a scary time. And the second benefit is control of your baby's sleep and wake schedule, because everything, of course, goes to baby. But with this, you can, when you know the baby's schedule, how much time should pass between naps, then you can get the baby down for sleep before they're overtired. You just start dancing and they don't put up a fight because they like it. They enjoy it. They just feel like they're dancing around with mom, and before they knew it, they were out. They're like, what happened? Somebody slipped me a roofie or something. And it's great because you can take time for yourself when the baby's asleep after that. And listening to your favorite music was huge with me. I love music, and I would listen to music from my childhood, from junior high school, and it just stimulated memories. I think music has that great ability to trigger memories from...
Oh, absolutely.
You can go right back. Yeah. And it helps to remember how you were then, that this is overwhelming, but still remember that you're not supposed to be taking it too serious. And the best benefit is exercise. I think that exercise releases so much tension, and it just makes you feel good, and you feel like you've done a little something for yourself at the same time. You're getting your baby to sleep, and you're doing something good for you. I think that's the best benefit.
Well, what made you come up with this method? I mean, where did it come from?
Just from being a new vulnerable mom. I understand that parents don't want to spend all night getting their baby to sleep. And I also, with my first baby, tried it once with the cry it out, and I was sick, as you were. And it was just out of desperation to find a loving yet speedier time, put down time to get the baby to sleep, to have time with my husband and for myself. And that was my happy medium,
and it
to come up with.
If you don't, okay, so so say you have a 6-month-old or a 9-month-old or even a 1-year-old. Can you just start using this method now, or is it too late?
No, I think you can, definitely can. I've had parents, all those times that you just mentioned, all those ages, you can start at any time. I think that they might take a little getting used to, but once you know how tired, that they're tired enough, rather, to go to sleep, I've tried it with my nephews just out of the blue just one time, and they just love it. It's just very comforting. They enjoy the movement. They enjoy the music, and it doesn't really matter what age they are, as long as they're not too heavy and you don't have any back problems, which is discussed too,
right.
Or dad can do the dancing.
So Yeah, so there really is, as long as they can, I mean, you know, as long as you're not, I guess, fighting them, I mean, what if they're putting up resistance to the whole thing?
I haven't heard too much of that. When they are squirmy, then I would, you know, put the music a little louder, dance a little faster, and just really, it's amazing. It sounds counterproductive to turn the music up when they're trying to go to sleep, but it meets them where they're at and brings them down gradually, and it's amazing.
I get why people would look at it and be like, well, the last thing I want to do is play rock music for my baby when I'm trying to get my baby to go to sleep and dance around with it. It's going to be like more hyped up. But no, I get how it would work. Like what you're saying is you're starting where the child is already at. You're not taking them from a sleepy place to a wound up place. You're meeting them where they're already at. And then you're encouraging the, you're just slowly bringing them down from that place. And I can totally see how it would work. I mean, it makes a lot of sense how it would work. Thinking back on having babies, of course, I can't, you know, try it out or anything because I don't have any babies. But I can totally, from, you know, my memories of having my kids and the struggles I went through, I see how it would work. I mean, it makes total sense because I had this colicky baby. So all of a sudden I'm like, all right, time to go to sleep. Right. Okay. I'm just going to stop crying, you know, and go to sleep. I mean, that's just not going to happen. So if I would have done something like this method, I think, you know, that and played, cause he loved, when the music was loud, my ex-husband and I, my husband at the time, my kid's dad, we would have, you know, we would run the vacuum cleaner because he was quiet when the vacuum cleaner was running. Anything. I mean, anything we could think of to just make him stop crying. So, you know, music definitely was one of the things that helped. But it didn't need to be loud. I remember it needed to be loud, but I never thought, okay, we're going to bring it down. I never put it together because I was in too... stressed. I was in too stressed. I think my place was too stressful in my head. You know, I there was no way I was rationalizing anything. I was just like, what am I doing wrong? And how do I make this kid stop screaming? You know?
Right.
So
right.
To have a method out there, to have a book you can buy and that teaches you what to do, whether you're pregnant right now, thinking of getting pregnant right now, you know, someone who just had a baby, you know, somebody who's struggling with this, you know, whatever. This is, I mean, what a great gift, you know, to give to, you know, at a baby shower or to, you know, to give a new mom. I mean, this could be because it's so beneficial. And, you know, if your baby goes to sleep quietly and your baby goes to sleep without too much stress and you put them down without a lot of stress, you know, with the kind of in a fun, loving way, you're going to sleep better too as the mom.
Exactly. Yeah. That's, you want, when you look back on this time, you want to have it that you did your best. I think that's having no regrets in life is great.
I always say I look back on my kids' childhood and think when they were very little, their babyhood, I guess I would say, as being hell. I mean, that's how I describe it, hell. Because, you know, I was pretty much doing it on my own. I was working a full-time job. I had, ten and a half months apart. And I didn't enjoy it at all. There was, you know,
right.
I've had those moments where you look and you're like, oh, my God, I can't believe I created this child. I can't believe I created this life. You know, all those moments, of course. And this undying love that you would throw yourself in front of a bus to keep them from getting a skinned knee. You know what I mean? All of that was there. But I feel like I rushed it. Like I rushed through it all, just trying to get to the next phase. You know, I just wanted to get to the next phase instead of enjoying the phase that we were at. And a lot of that was because of lack of sleep. A lot of it was because I was friggin' exhausted. I was so tired. And how do you enjoy anything when you are getting maybe 45 minutes to an hour sleep at a time? You know,
yeah, your head load was too heavy. That's you needed some support. That's too much to ask of anyone.
That and having, I mean, people have Irish twins all the time, which is what I, you know, what it's called, the Irish twin thing. And there's real twins. I mean, you know, people have, twins. I mean, it's the same sort of thing. It's, you know, yeah, it was kind of double, but you know, the hardest thing was the colic, and that was just one kid. So, you know, that was the hardest thing to deal with. So there were just so many situations where I could see this method working so well. And again, this being such a great gift to, you know, not only give yourself, but to give someone else, like I said, that's pregnant or just had a baby or about to have a baby, whatever. I mean, you know, and the understanding that what the baby's going through, it's kind of like a detox, like detoxing from being in utero to being alone in the world,
right,
kind of.
Right.
Now,
adjusting. Exactly.
Yeah, this is adjustment period, and we can't expect that that's going to that's going to be easy for the baby, and you know that they just know. Oh, okay. You know they don't know. There's no instinct there. They're babies. They have no idea. So, anyway, I like the concept. I like the idea, and I want you to give everybody some information before we sign off on where they can find your book, and do you have a website? Anything you want to promote?
Well, at gentlegoodnight.com, you can buy the book, and it's free worldwide shipping there, and it's $8.99, and it's also available on Barnes & Noble and Amazon. And we have a great group of moms on Facebook, on facebook.com/gentlegoodnight, and you can get unbiased opinions from them of how it's working for them, and different ages. You could talk to different moms, whoever, wherever they're at, and that's about it. And
well, that's great, because that's what I'm talking about. Those support groups that didn't exist 20 years ago that are out there now, and this is, you know, and this is a great method that people are using. A lot of people are using, and to be able to, you know, be able to say, hey, this is working for me, this part's not, and then somebody say, oh, I just changed this or that, and you know, and I because I was having
right.
the same problem. You know, the kind of sharing that new moms
right.
can do. I think that's great. So that's facebook.com/gentlegoodnight, and then your website is gentlegoodnight.com. And everybody, you can also find the book on Barnes & Noble and Amazon. And like I said, I did look it up. Obviously, I didn't need it yet, but don't think I won't be buying them for everybody I know that has the baby, because I just remember this phase as being so stressful, and this bedtime thing, you know, and the baby sense your tension. You know, if you're tense, if you're feeling tension, you know, they're picking up on that tension, which is just making it worse. So if you're fearing bedtime, you bet they're feeling that fear, you know. So, you know, to me, this is like something that I would just like, you know, buy like several, you know, just several books and just give them to people that are having babies, just because, you know what, I don't want people to have bad memories of their children being babies. I want those beautiful memories for people, because I don't have them, you know.
And that's important. People make mistakes, you know, and it's not about making them feel guilty. That sometimes just comes across as too preachy, what I'm trying to say. But I've made a ton of mistakes as a new parent that I wish I would have done more research for. But when I knew better, I did better. And just sharing information so people can walk a better path than you did, I think that's what it's all about. And I'm not trying to put a parent down who used a cry it out method. I'm just trying to open their mind to maybe a better way. That's, I'm not saying that you're a bad person because you did a cry it out method. Just that, just consider this.
Yeah, it's an alternative, and if you use common sense, and you're thinking about what's best for your child and best for you long term, you have to realize that the cry it out method, in my opinion, is just not good. It's not the healthy way to go. It cannot possibly be healthy. You're stressed out. Everybody in the house is stressed out because they're listening to this screaming baby. And you can, and for me, I mean, I could just picture, I remember trying to get through it one night and I was like, I'm never doing this again. I didn't. I stopped it after about 15 minutes. I couldn't do it anymore. And I couldn't, and that 15 minutes felt like 15 hours. It was horrible. And I'm picturing his little face getting all red and him getting sweaty and all, you know, I'm picturing all this going on. I was like throwing up. I really was sick.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's no way I would want anybody else to go through that. You know, you want to definitely find a different method. And this definitely sounds like a really good one because it makes sense. You're holding the baby. The baby's used to being close to you from being in your womb. You're holding the baby. You're holding the baby and you're rocking or bouncing the baby. You're dancing with the baby. That baby is used to movement because it was inside of you. You know, all of this, it just makes sense. It's used to your voice. It's used to hearing the music that you normally listen to. You know, it's
right, your
it
heartbeat.
I do. Yeah, and your heartbeat and all the things. That's going to be comforting. You know, the only thing it knows. It's the only thing the baby knows at the point when it's first born. So I love
that. There's a version, I'm sorry, on YouTube, I forgot to mention, that if you want to look at it, and that can be used for anybody, dad, mom, caregiver, it's not nursing, but it's on YouTube. If you look up Gentle Goodnight or my name, Lisa Armenta, it should pop up. But it'll show you exactly how it works.
That's really cool. All right, great. So everybody also, you can check it out if you want to see how it works on YouTube. Just look up Gentle Goodnight and you'll be able to find it there too. I really like it. I really do. I think that these things that, you know, that our sleep issues start from the very beginning. And you know, from the very beginning of our lives, and I think that, you know, that they continue, and really just it just gets harder and harder as we get more stressed. And you know, having a baby should be a beautiful time and a time full of memories and of good memories, not bad memories, good memories, and a time of bonding and not feel like you're in the middle of, you know, a war, you know, all the time. So I think this is a great idea. So everyone definitely check out Lisa's website at gentlegoodnight.com. And Lisa, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you. I'm so grateful you let me speak to you today. Thank you.
I'm glad. I hope your cold gets better.
Oh, thank you. I apologize.
I feel bad. I'm having allergy trouble today myself, so I can relate. Trust me.
Okay.
All right. Feel better soon. Thanks so much for being on.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right, everyone. That's our show for tonight, today. You can, again, visit both of our guests, Jason Dowd at dowdstudios.com, and, of course, Lisa Armenta at gentlegoodnight.com, and you know, check out both their books and what they have going on in their world. I think that, like I said, I think that this Gentle Goodnight thing, I just love the concept of it. And so if you're a new mom that knows me, you're probably going to be getting this book, so just beware, be prepared. Anyway, so that's pretty much the show for today. Every week, Just Believe Radio airs at 1 p.m. Eastern. We have amazing guests on every week covering different fascinating topics. Don't forget to check out my webpage at www.lisatarvis.com. That's LISATARVES.com. You'll find links to my Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn pages, and you'll also find links to my book called Just Believe, which is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all those book sites that are out there. So everyone have a super week coming up. We're approaching the last week of September, which is blowing my mind. But enjoy it, and hopefully everybody can have a nice, safe week and find a little bit of joy this week. Again, thanks for listening, and I'll talk to you all next week.